This talk entitled Islam, The Untold Story was given by the late Father John Hardin. Father was a Jesuit priest and founder of the Institute on Religious Life. At the end of his talk, information on the Institute on Religious Life will be given.
Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Mary, Mother of God, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. First, a couple of announcements. We are having, as you know, two classes. This present one, then, is on Islam, which covers a whole chapter in your textbook, as we may call it, of Religions of the World, what I have done. And I did this for, obviously, what I thought was a good reason. I photostated the whole chapter on Islam from another book that I have in comparative religion called The Eastern Religions, A Christian View, or The Non-Christian Religions, A Christian View. These are lectures that I gave at the University of Ottawa, and among the four lectures I gave was one on Islam. There's no way we can cover everything in that chapter during our period of class. I strongly urge you to read the chapter at your early convenience. Islam is the fastest growing religion outside of Christianity in the world. There are now almost 1 billion Muslims in the world, and the center of the Muslim revolution in North and South America, the center of that revolution is a place called Detroit, Michigan. People have no idea what's going on. Detroit is the center of the Islamic revolution, concentrating, of course, on the Afro-Americans. That's what happened in the 7th and 8th centuries. Now it began Islam in 632 A.D., which is the year 1 in the Muslim calendar. However, what Muhammad did better, what he inspired his followers to do, was to conquer Christian countries. In the 3rd century A.D., there were over 200 bishops, Catholic bishops, in North Africa alone. Most of the martyrs of the Catholic Church, and there have been millions, most of the martyrs of the Catholic Church are martyrs of Islam. In other words, I want to, shall I say it, wake you up. I brought with me, it's not the latest, it's a 94, or 98. This is the 94 Muslim map of Detroit. 23 mosques in Detroit. The largest concentration of Islam in the whole New World is Detroit. Here is a schedule, and this again goes back to 91. Annual convention, developing Islamic environment in North America. Very clear, very definite. The purpose is to Muslimize, de-Christianize North America, and doing a phenomenally effective job. What I'll do here is, of course, no way can we cover everything. These are my enlarged pages. And let me just add, I would like to have at least 35, even maybe 40 minutes for questions, provided you provide enough questions. There's enough here for a semester course. So you have those baskets with questions in. And please don't write too extensively, and write, if possible, as big as you can and as dark as you can. What I'll be doing here then is going over the pages you've received. I presume you have received, haven't you?
Yes.
Now, these are enlarged, but the pages are basically the same. Although we classify Islam as a non-Christian religion, along with Hinduism, Buddhism, and Confucianism, the designation must be explained. When we speak of the Oriental religions, like Hinduism, as non-Christian, they are non-Christian in what I call the primitive sense. Hinduism, Buddhism were founded centuries before Christ. Islam, on the other hand, is different. Islam was founded, as I said, 632 AD, and the Muslim people, and they prefer that name, Muslim, M-U-S-L-I-M. The Muslim people know a lot about Christianity, but what an adversative. I think I've said this before, but worth repeating. One of my favorite names for Islam is Nestorian Christianity. In the early 5th century, in Constantinople, there was a patriarch, correspond now to cardinal, of the Archdiocese of Constantinople, by the name of Nestorius, N-E-S-T-O-R-I-U-S. Nestorius, a learned man, he did not believe that Jesus was a divine person. He believed that Jesus was not just human, which we believe too, but was a human person who was very, very intimate with God, but not God himself. And being patriarch and wide influence, he was a heretic. And the Pope, then reigning, called a council, the famous Council of Ephesus, E-P-H-E-S-U-S, date 431 A.D. By the time the council was called by the Pope, so many Christians had given up their faith in Christ's divinity that even though the patriarch was condemned as a heretic, and Nestorianism is a heresy, not a few, even bishops who came to the general council, agreed with Nestorius, especially bishops from Northern Europe. Well, what is even more serious is that, although Nestorianism was condemned, the Christians in what we would call now the Arabic countries or the Near East, the people, in large measure, were Nestorians. The patriarch's influence was so deep on the people, though the council condemned him as a heretic, the people were mainly Nestorians. Consequently, when Muhammad came along, and his purpose was to convert the Near Eastern people, convert them from polytheism, believing in many gods, to believing in only one God, the only Christianity that Muhammad knew was Nestorian. At the heart of Nestorian, call it Christianity, is of course the denial that Mary is the Mother of God. And consequently, I describe Islam, as I think I've said before, Islam is Nestorian Christianity. What one archbishop, heretic, patriarch, in fact, the damage he has done is beyond human calculation. And the bottom line was, as I've just said, Nestorius denied that Mary is the Theotokos, T-H-E-O-T-O-K-O-S, Theotokos, that she is the Tokos, the mother, Theou, of God. So what happened? Nestorius, as I said, was condemned, but because the people of the Near East needed to believe that there is only one God, so the Near Eastern people then bought Islam, and those who are unwilling to become Muslims, and this is in the Quran, were first enslaved, and they still refused to, shall we say, convert to Islam. They were killed. It is now over 13 centuries since the rise of Islam. Most of the martyrs of the Catholic Church, millions, have been martyred by the Muslims. Muhammad believed himself inspired to write what is called the Quran. And the Quran is a very thick book. I would say at least the size of our both Old and New Testaments, all claimed to be inspired. In the Quran, Muhammad spells out, first of all, in chapter after chapter, what are called surahs, chapters of the Quran, spells out the absolute necessity of believing in only one God, so that Islam is monotheistic. Let me just read one paragraph. It became Muhammad's consuming passion to establish Islam as the divinely authorized religion of Arabia. From what he claimed to be first a mystic, he became a preacher. And from preacher, he became military leader. I consider Muhammad the greatest military leader of all times, much more successful than, say, Caesar or Napoleon. And why? Because Muhammad had the genius of combining his military genius with propagating the religion which he believed was divinely inspired. And ever since, now for over 13 centuries, this has been the main way in which Islam has been propagated, by the sword, and most, and I mean that superlative, and most successfully. In a series of successful battles at Badr, Medina, Hunayn, Muhammad conquered those who opposed him. The people of Medina were overwhelmed by superior numbers and zeal. The citizens of Mecca begged for mercy. From Medina in 631, the Prophet, as he called himself, issued his norms, which excluded idolaters from the pilgrimage to Mecca, where he became thoroughly Islamized. In 632, the year of his death, over 40,000 persons made the pilgrimage with him as a symbol of his sweeping success and to pledge their allegiance to Muhammad. And I wish to stress one reason that I thought was worth making you have a chapter in your textbook on Islam. But because this book, Comparative Religion, here I analyze the four major non-Christian Eastern religions, analyze them from a Christian perspective. But I would share this with you. There's no way that I could spend the weeks in a lecture on the subject, but I urge you to please, please read this chapter. And notice, behind Muhammad's zeal was the destruction of paganism, which for Muhammad meant the worship of more than one god. For Muhammad, paganism is polytheism. And guess whom Muhammad claimed as the divine source of the Bible of Islam, the Quran, no less than the Archangel Gabriel. Let me just read again the last paragraph, not entirely. Even today, Islam is the Quran. There are believing Muslims, and I know what I'm saying, believing Muslims who vow themselves to memorize the Quran. I repeat, it is the length of our Bible. What the Quran teaches is what Muslims believe more than can be said of any other religion. There is no church, no hierarchy, no magisterium in Islam. It is the Quran. And now, for over 1,300 years, has been the principal source, shall we call it, inspiration of the Muslim people. I may have mentioned this on some occasion. Shortly after I came to Detroit, I was asked to prepare a couple for marriage, then living on university property. He was a Muslim, she was a Catholic. So our first meeting, naturally, I asked him, what religion do you practice? Islam. Do you read the Quran? I sure do, every day. Do you say the prescribed prayers? I do. Then I asked him, do you believe in polygamy? Why, of course. I lit the girl. She was still smiling. So then I thought I'd ask a few more questions. As I asked him questions about Islam, he knew Islam pretty well. But then he said, Father, please don't misunderstand us Muslims. We don't put away our wives. We keep them all. I gave them three instructions. I tried to get across to the girl. First of all, they could not be validly married. So then, after the third meeting, she called me up. My fiancé and I have decided we have found another priest to give us instructions. So I said, I'll continue praying for you and your fiancé. First, the concept of God in Islam. The single most fundamental premise of Islam is that there is only one God, in opposition to the widespread polytheism in pre-Islamic Arabia. One single passage has been quoted to the contrary. Occasion when he was momentarily tempted to compromise with the Quraysh tribe. However, let's read at least something from the Quran. Page 113. He unto whom belongs the sovereignty of the heavens and the earth, he has chosen no son, nor has he any partner in the sovereignty. He has created everything that has meted out for the measure. Yet they chose beside him other gods, who create nothing but of themselves created. They have no power to hurt nor to profit for themselves. They possess neither death nor life, nor the power to raise from the dead. And this is part of Islam. Those who disbelieve this say, it is nothing but a lie that he has invented. And other people have helped him with it, so they have produced a slander and a lie. So, in Islam, there's only one God. And notice, this one God has no son. And the heart of Islam, therefore, is an open, complete denial of the Trinity. And how many religions, allegedly Christian, have borrowed deeply from Islam, including, in case you have not heard, in Utah. What's the religion of Utah? Mormonism. Then notice, bottom 113. Lo, your Lord is Allah, who created the heavens and the earth in 6 days. As you see immediately, Muhammad borrowed heavily from the Old Testament, but unfortunately, talk about the damage that one single heretical bishop can do. The bishop, of course, was Nestorius. And as a result of Nestorian heresy, denying that Jesus is, of course, true man, but also true God. And ever that is Mother Mary, of course, she is the mother of his human nature. But because a mother conceives and gives birth to a person, Jesus, we believe, is no merely human person. He is a divine person who has two natures. This is absolutely alien to Islam. And consequently, for the Muslims, Allah, which really means the God, the Lord, the Master. The Muslims, therefore, have borrowed heavily from the Old Testament. But sadly, as we'll see, they borrowed heavily from the so-called apocryphal books of the New Testament. That is why, I think I told you maybe more than once, when on the faculty of the Lutheran School of Theology in Chicago, my fellow Lutheran professors said, John, you keep referring to the church this and the church that. We've got the Bible. Well, prolonged faculty meeting we had. Remember, I asked them, how many Gospels were originally written? What are you talking about? How many Gospels? 4. They told me, now look, you're all doctorates in theology. You can't be serious. How many Gospels were originally written? They got angry. So I told them, 15 Gospels, 11, as we call them, apocryphal Gospels. And it's these apocryphal Gospels on which poor Muhammad borrowed for his understanding of Christianity. Page 115, second last paragraph. God is designated by two names in Islam. The more familiar Allah, and the less well known Ar-Rahman. Almost certainly, Allah, as I've said before, is a contraction of two terms, Al, the definite article, the, and Ilah, the God, to distinguish him from all others, and of course, from spurious deities. Each tribe among the Arabs in Muhammad's day might refer to his own God. Hence the need for the Muslims who are saying there is only the God. Rahman is most likely borrowed from the Semitic language. There may be traced to the stress that Muhammad placed until later on. He let go of that on God's mercy. That is Rahman. There is no mercy in Orthodox Islam. I cannot tell you how fascinating and how informative the history of Islam really is. The denial of Mary being the mother of God is a single irrit, and don't forget, is a single main reason for the by now millions of martyrs of the Catholic faith. Is Mary or isn't she the mother of God? As I've said, I'm sure, on more than one occasion, in this century, in the Sudan, never read this, never, it knows Detroit News or Free Press. In the 1950s, over 2 million Catholics were starved to death because they refused to deny that Mary is the Mother of God. And of course, Islam, as I indicated before, has deeply penetrated the whole world. As I mentioned also before, among the bishops who did not accept the condemnation of Nestorius were bishops from Northern Europe. And it is no wonder in the 16th century all the countries that broke with the Catholic Church were in Northern Europe. Sweden, Norway, England, Scotland, Wales, Denmark, and large parts of Germany. Now, what does Islam say about created spirits? They play a very large and important part in Muslim religion. Having pictured, this is Muhammad, Allah, as sovereign ruler of the world, he saw in this world three kinds of intelligent beings. Men and women who are born by natural procreation, fin or jinn, who are like human beings except their bodies are igneous and not strictly corporeal, and angels who are spiritual powers but without any bodies. As you would guess, Muhammad borrowed heavily from the Bible's teaching about created spirits. And as a consequence, in Islam, there is a deep veneration for the good spirits and a profound fear of the evil spirits. You may be surprised, but over the years, it is now about 40 years that I've been teaching comparative religion. One of the strongest criticisms of the Western, at least nominally, Christian world is the neglect of the spiritual world. And I've lectured on the subject, written on the subject. Why are the Muslims so hard to convert? Very difficult. I mean convert to Catholic Christianity. One obvious reason, of course, is that they would have to accept Christ's divinity, that Jesus was indeed the living God in human form. But there are two other reasons. And all I can say is we Americans should weep when we hear, or when, as I do, read literature published by the Muslims. And the Muslims are so critical of Christians. First, because Christians are so preoccupied with the material world of space and time. Oh, the skyscrapers we build. The lavish industries we develop. That's one reason. Preoccupation with the material world. Another reason is that for the Muslims, Christians are not giving the example of living, hear it, of living the chaste lives they claim their religion requires. Many of the movies produced in the United States are forbidden in Muslim countries. They are so obnoxiously immoral. There is a great respect, therefore, for the angels. What I couldn't say, what strong language I could use, but the neglect of the angels in modern, even Catholic Christianity. Now, page 119, the prophets and Muhammad. According to Islam, divine communication, called it revelation, comes, of course, from Allah, the God. However, it is directly given to the angels. They pass it on to human beings, specially chosen for the task. And that, not coincidentally, is good Christian theology. These human intermediaries are sometimes called prophets, more often messengers, sometimes even called apostles. Inhabitants of the earth have been angels. Angels would have been sent to them. But since they are men, men who eat and drink, we have wives and children, they are God's ambassadors to their own kind. We may not have time because the subject that we're talking about is an ocean. Needless to say, women do not have the role which they have in Christianity. And the main single historic reason for the high place of women in Christianity is that a woman was the mother of God. Altogether, the Quran identifies some 28 prophets of the Lord. 4 Arabian personages, 18 are Old Testament figures, 3 belong to the New Testament, and 2 are identified by, well, metaphoric names without further description, without dwelling on that subject. We go on. It is important to know that the relationship between Islam and Judaism is profoundly hostile, just by way of introduction. Muhammad had attached himself personally to the family of Abraham. The Quran describes Abraham as the founder of the first monotheistic religion, from which all had more or less strayed. Muhammad's task was to restore the faith of Abraham among the people. And then, there are some sentences here that are crucial. Following 2 are, once he made himself, well, so related to Abraham, he, Muhammad, made Islam a religion of the chosen people of God. Muhammad saw in his day what Abraham saw, well, 2,600 years before, a world sunk in polytheism. He explained, belongs by right to the descendants of Abraham. And here's the lineup. These are crucial for understanding Islam. In the Abrahamic line were Moses, and David and Jesus. In the same line was Muhammad. Coupled, therefore, to the role of the Jews as the elected people, gentil electa, of Yahweh, whose prophetic function was to communicate to the Gentiles the wisdom of the Lord and hear it, and comparable to the mission of the Christians, told by Jesus to go and preach the gospel to all nations, the followers of Muhammad were commissioned to do the same. Their divine mandate is solemn and specific. And hear it. I know Islam too well. Hear it. The indifference, the coldness of Christians to evangelize, to proclaim Christ, is so much fuel for the Muslims. These Christians call themselves the chosen people. Don't be silly. These Christians are as bad as were the Jews. The Jews were the chosen people. Christians claim to be chosen people. Chosen for what? Where is the zeal? I know Islam too well. I've spoken to too many educated, highly cultured Muslims. If you believe, that Jesus was indeed the living God who became man, how come you are so passive, so indifferent? And by contrast, the Muslims, now let's be honest, are militantly zealous. Something about the Muslim, which is the average English translation, maybe for a Muslim. The Muslim believer has to answer the question, what is a Muslim? Many times in the history of Islam, it was literally a matter of life and death, in a way that no Hindu or Buddhist would ever be called upon to answer. It is part of the strength of the religion founded by Muhammad, made it very clear who is a true follower of Allah and who is not. A simple definition of a Muslim would be that he is one who believes. You believe. You take on the word of Allah. The faith demands an undiluted acceptance of one God, sovereign Lord of the universe, an absolute master of creation. And here over the years, in teaching Islam, a whole semester course on Islam, there is no real free will in Islam. In this sense, what Calvin, Zwingli, and other so-called founders of Protestantism did, they just borrowed from Muhammad. Certain people are predestined for everlasting happiness, and others, poor dears, for everlasting misery. A Muslim not only believes in the God who revealed himself to Gabriel, to Muhammad, he also gives public testimony to his faith. And this is where we Christians and we Catholics, how we need to examine our consciences. Two statements from the Quran. Lo, the religion with Allah is al-Islam. Islam means surrender. Al is a definite article. The surrender to his will and guidance. Again, he has named you Muslimun, those who submit. Of all time and in this scripture, that the messenger may be a witness against you, that you may be witnesses against mankind. And years of teaching Islam, how important is the next paragraph for us Christians. When a Muslim is said to believe, the implication is that this cost him something. The vice demanded is self-surrender. That's what Islam means. Surrender. Surrender of self. Why self-surrender? Because Islamic theology says that man's natural tendency is to believe in the gods of his own making and always the projections of his own ego. I like that. And, of course, Islam has conquered now, and the figures are approaching. It is assumed by the year 2000 there will be over 1 billion Muslims in the world. It is comparatively easy for Christians to speak about Islam, wanting him to know it, because of the close kinship between Christianity and the religion founded by Muhammad. However, these two religions are very different. Muhammad never doubted that the revelations he received were to supersede the faith, as he said, of the followers of the Nazarene. That is the standard name given to Jesus Christ. In fact, from Muhammad's perspective, Islam is the opposite. In my younger days, I used big, long words, antithetical, which means the opposite to Christianity. And it was, remember, not authentic Christianity that he found in pre-Islamic Arabia. However, both Islam and Christianity have much in common. And in teaching my Jesuits from Asia and Africa over the years, you go back to their native countries, and I told them that's how I got into these religions. My Jesuits from India knew almost nothing about Hinduism. My Jesuit students from Africa, almost nothing about Islam. In other words, to convert the Muslims. And I consider this the single gravest duty of Catholics in the world today. Because either we convert the Muslims or they will conquer even more of the world. What do Islam and Christianity have in common? Just a word about each. In both religions, God is transcendent and immanent. In other words, God is creator. He transcends. He supersedes everything else in the world. At the same time, however, this God is immanent. He dwells within the creatures that he made. But he is not one of those creatures. Now, Christ in Islam. The Quran gives a number of honorable titles to Jesus. And in fact, more noble titles to him than to anyone else. He is called a sign. He is called mercy. He is called witness. He's called example. And it calls him by his proper name, Jesus. He calls him Messiah. And that is the main reason why there is no love lost between the Jews and the Muslims. In Muhammad's thinking, Jesus was the Messiah. He was, of course, the son of Mary. And given other names like messenger, prophet, servant, word, even the Spirit of God. Well, read the stories for yourself. The accounts of the Annunciation and the birth of Jesus in the Quran. Bottom 132. The title Son of Mary is remarkable. So remarkable it should be more closely examined by Christians. Some Muslim exegetes, biblical scholars, claim that Well, even Mariam is treated as a name, yet it was first used by the angels in speaking to Mary. Call attention to the fact that Jesus would be born without a father. Every believing Muslim believes that Mary was a virgin. Isn't that great? And this, again in teaching, especially my own fellow Jesuits, and sharing my thoughts with you, the key to converting the Muslim world is one word, Mary. Believing Muslims have the highest possible respect for Mary. And as again, I've said especially in the sixth lecture that I gave in Fatima. Otherwise, I wouldn't have had the privilege of visiting Fatima.